This month on Party of One, we are introduced to several new characters, like Meg, who had a secret to reveal to her best friend and roommate, Frank. We are also introduced to a warrior, isolated and alone in a distant outpost, who has a night she'll never forget. Introduced to a half-orc fighter searching for the one thing that will give him his happy ending. And Carl, a garbage man thrust into the life of a James Bond type. With me to talk about the last month of Party of One, the host and creator, Jeff Stormer. I am Kevin Gallagher, and welcome to the After Party. Thank you for being on After Party of One, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited. Yeah. This is very flattering is how I would describe it.
Yeah, well, and it's definitely obviously inspired by you and your show, Party of One Pod, for anyone that, if you're listening to this and you don't know the podcast that we're doing this after talk show on, I pray for you because it's going to be a weird experience.
It's an unusual experience for you to stumble on this particular podcast on this particular night. But in case you're unfamiliar, Party of One is an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing experiences. Every week I sit down with a friend, we play a two-player game, we share some laughs, maybe a few tears, and have a really good time. New episodes drop every Friday at partyofonepodcast.com. I almost have that memorized. Almost.
That's good. I have yet to memorize anything. It's especially with this show. Like this show now, I'm going into blind. Obviously, it's the first one. It's going to be a monthly show, which you and I went back and forth about, like, kind of the best way to run this show. And you were very I do want to say very, like, it's all you. Like, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Just make sure, like, you give me like one clause that I had to follow, basically.
Yeah. I said, you reached out to me with this idea, and I said, it is your project. I give you 100% clarity. All I ask is, I believe my only clause was don't be a jerk, which I trust you pretty well about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's nice because we've had a chance to be able to hang out and talk shop few times over the last few months. And I was saying this on Everything Is Awesome, like promoting this show. Like, I really wanted to do this because I feel like we've been podcasting in the same vicinity as each other for the last two and a half, three years. But over the last year, I feel like we've actually gotten like really close as friends.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I feel like we've transcended into friendship in the last like year in a solid way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mentioned that, and I was like, and I wanted to do this project where I did an after talk show about, and I felt like actual plays make the most sense when it comes to that in the podcasting world. And I wanted to like take that friendship and also kind of have like a semi working relationship with you as well, because I just respect the work you do as a podcaster, as a storyteller, and a RPG person. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just it's. So I'm happy to be that we're finally doing this. I think it makes a lot of sense that you're our first guest. And for those listening, you'll hear it in my outro, but this is the after party. This is where we kind of mellow out. It's open to more than just, it's not exactly like Party of One where it's just two people. We will have up to probably two other people on the couch in addition to myself. But tonight it's going to be just Jeff and I talking the month of September. So if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to episodes 144, 145, 46, and 47, that's all 100, by the way, do that now. Take pause, go listen to those four episodes, and then hop back in with us because we're going to probably spoil some stuff.
We're definitely going to have some spoilers, I'm for sure. So yeah, pause it. Pause it now. All right, we're good.
And you're back. Yes, and we're back. The people that need to take a minute, they can take a minute and they'll hop back in with us. I am really excited. I can't tell you, and I think I threw this on Twitter. I was really excited that what ended up being the first episode we get to sit down and talk about is episode 144, which you had Cat Cool on as your guest.
That's a good episode. That was an episode we've been planning for a very long time, and I'm very happy that it worked out the way it did. It worked out perfectly. I'm very happy with that episode.
And for me, because I walk like kind of the line of both having like a fandom in the world of tabletop role-playing games, and also like having an equivalent to that in the real world. So like you getting Cat Cool on your show to me was like almost like when I got Aaron McGathy on my show.
Mm-hmm.
where I was like, oh my God, that's like, also that's like me getting Kat Kool on my show. Cause I've been wanting to have her on my show as well. And, so when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, like I'm sure you're like, Jeff's gotta be jumping for joy.
I was so excited, and I'm excited because like Kat age, like a while ago, had tweet like Kat has been on my list, my guest list, like dream list forever. Mm-hmm. And one day she just tweeted like somebody had asked her if they were going to play a two-player game on One Shot, and she was like, well, actually there's Party of One and I've always kind of wanted to do it, but I don't know the right way to. And I was like, okay, we could probably make that happen. And then like we tried to line up our schedules for a while, and it was, and but we finally like got everything in place. It was perfect, and we played like it was the perfect game and guest, and it was that day, like it was a really great recording and a great day. It was just good. It was just all around good. I have nothing but nice things to say. I have nothing but nice things to say about every one of the guests. So get ready for just me gushing.
Yeah. And I mean, I say this all the time. There's always, I mean, I love every single one of my guests that I have on the show. And what will be both Everything is Awesome and now After Party of One Pod. I'll love every guest that I have on, but there's always that special guest that you get once in a blue moon that you're like, oh my God, I'm so, so happy that I booked this person. Like, it's just a get list. Doesn't take anything away from any other guest, but it's just like, it's a goal. It's a little personal goal that you never thought you might get to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It almost didn't happen. I will say that.
Well, and I'm glad it did.
Entirely my fault, but the recording almost did not happen.
Oh my God. Well, I'm glad it did. You guys sat down.
I'm very happy.
Yeah, you guys sat down and played The Sky is Gray and You Are Distressed.
Yes, it is a two-player game about a couple with a secret, or rather two people in a long-term relationship. They are not necessarily romantic. In our playthrough, they were not romantic. They were roommates. One of them has a secret, and in the course of the game, that one, the person with the secret reveals that secret.
And that, so this type of game, this like conversational based game, which if I understood correctly during your playthrough, had cards to help guide the conversation, correct?
So yeah, what it has is it's like a, I think it's 3 pages. It's like a 3-page PDF. And on it, it has basically two separate like scripts where each person has a very specific series of prompts that you ask the other person, they respond, and then you kind of role play that out. So it starts with like it starts with one person reading the line, "The sky is gray and you are distressed." Then I pause, my partner reads the line, "We don't have to talk about why you're distressed, we simply know it's the case." And like it's those prompts, and then we have a series of questions like, "When you look at me, what do you see?" And so it was sort of, if you listen to the episode, there are sort of conversational prompts that we've peppered in that kind of like when we come to the right moment, we drop it in and it kind of drives the next leg of the conversation.
And I got to say that you guys did a really good job at making all that sound supernatural. There was maybe one question that I can't think of off the top of my head right now, but I do remember one question. I was like, oh, that sounds like one of those cards. But even then, that's just me kind of knowing the game, or at least the concept of the game,
and
knowing podcasting to a degree, like to hear the different inflection. So it was, but you guys did a really good job at like, save for that one question or one prompt, I didn't hear anything else that sounded like a prompt. It was all supernatural. Not to say supernatural as in ghosts, but supernatural.
Right.
As
it was
in
very, it was, it, we, it, we,
organic.
Yes. That's a good word for it. We really kind of, once we started, and I give Kat all the credit in the world for just like, cause I basically asked her like, if that was the game she wanted to play that afternoon. And she was like, yeah, totally. Send me the PDF. That sounds great. I sent her the PDF and we just hit the ground running. The second we started, it was just perfect. We were both just like completely in it.
This game, and I think the last game in our series of conversations today are going to be the ones I think we talk a lot about. They both, they kind of bookend this month and resonated with me in a big way. But this one is, it reminds me of The Bite that you played.
Yes.
Ages ago.
I think that was May. No, you know what? I remember... I remember I know the exact day that we released that episode, The Bite, because it was Election Day 2016.
Oh my God, was it?
It was Election Day 2016.
Oh my God. Wow, that's crazy.
I will always remember dropping that episode, walking out, going to vote, and then being like, people are going to really love this episode.
Well, you know what? They did.
They did. Just was not the big talking point of the day.
No. But and that game I've actually played at, I did a live show for this little, very small horror convention I put together, like in 3 weeks. It was called Necrocomicon.
That's a good name. That's a good name.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know. Like I saw it somewhere. Like someone said someone should make that, and it just be an Ash versus Evil Dead convention. I was like, I'm gonna throw together a little convention myself of this. And we talked about it was we played The Bite to open the event, and then we watched Army of Darkness, and then we did Everything Is Awesome afterwards. Playing The Bite, man, that game, if you don't have the right people involved, or you're not prepared to go at it in a conversation, which mm-hmm. you would think that as a podcaster, I would, like we fell flat on our face with that game. I think this type of game where there's no mechanic other than your voice is super difficult, and you've done it numerous times with several different people. This is, I think, definitely, you know, just kind of knowing Kat and where she comes from mm-hmm. in the industry and where she's, you know, what she did with the One Shot Network. She's definitely a strong person to do this type of game style, and you guys crushed it.
Thank you.
I think one of my favorite things about this is this game that you guys played was how human you played the character. You played Meg.
Yes.
And Kat played Frank. And Meg is now, is it always Meg is the one that has the secret?
Meg has a secret. Yeah. Meg always has a secret. So the way it works is Meg has a secret. Frank is going to find out that secret during play. How it normally works, there's two kind of approaches to it. There is a 2d6 table, so 2 through 12, you roll 2 six-sided dice, 7 being the most common option, break out from there, of normal secrets. Normal secrets being like, Meg is cheating, or like, Meg has met someone. Or, I might actually, you know what, I'm at my laptop, I can just pull up the game.
Yeah, there you go, that works.
Yeah, okay, here we go. So yeah, Meg has, normally there's a 2d6 table, so you roll 2d6, 7 being the most common option. It goes, you know, more less likely from there, of kind of secrets that are like, I have been sober for 3 months. I have an ex that wants to hurt you. I don't trust your best friend. I've accepted a job 300 miles away. These are like the normal secrets. The game traditionally runs on those. There is also a table of what are called gonzo secrets that you roll 4d6 and pick off of there. Things like, I'm a hologram. The Holy Grail is in our attic. There's a South American cartel coming to kill me. Or the one that I had rolled, but I was so desperate to get that I almost cheated if I hadn't gotten it. I am an android.
Yeah, and that, I'll tell you what, the hologram one almost is on the same level of that kind of secret to reveal. Don't know how, the way you guys set up your story with these two characters, I don't know if it would have worked all that well, but Android definitely did. And what I love about what you did with it is how human you played it the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, never once, and obviously, you know, the beginning of that is you're going to be very human because you're keeping the secret. But even once that secret's revealed, Meg got even more human, mm-hmm. I think.
And part of the magic of it was, like, I knew I was, part of the magic for me of it was, like, I was playing it as human as I could. Like I was genuinely like, okay, I mentioned this in like our debrief, but like, there's a lot of coming out in that episode.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, okay, I have to tell this secret to this person and how they view me might change. And I was, and it hit some notes for me that I was not ready for, which is why immediately I'm just so nervous. Cause I'm thinking like, okay, this is going to be fun. Oh no. What have I done? Oh no. But the other part that I think is really fun is I knew from moment one that like I was going to just drop in as many robot jokes as I could. And the challenge was to make sure that none of them came off as jokes.
Yeah, no. And I'll tell you, I think there was one that you said, I had to rewind it. Because I was like, there's no way he just said that. This is hilarious. And I wrote it down here. Dreaming about DOS interfaces. That line got me. I don't know if, because I forget what I took my notes with the other episodes. I don't know that there was another quote in the next three games that got me the way that dreaming about DOS interfaces got me.
My favorite is right at the top of that episode. I'm talking to Frank. Frank asks me a question about like how I see the future, and I just casually like, and this is maybe 15 minutes before I drop the secret that I'm a robot, is I casually just am like, yeah, no, I've never really been wired that way.
Oh,
and we just
what?
Roll with it, because it's just a normal thing that you would say to a friend is like, hey, I'm not really wired that way. But like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, I said wired that way. You see, because I'm a robot.
That's real good. And, I feel like here's something that I think an added benefit to doing this show, at least for me, is now that like anytime you're a guest on the show, I can go back and listen and like pick up these things that I missed that. I completely missed all these little robot references that you made before the secret was revealed. And it's, and I'll tell you, you did a great job, necessarily revealing that's what it was going to be. The whole time that the lead up felt like, Kat's character Frank thought it was going to be about, you know, not wanting to be roommates anymore. To me, it felt like you were going to confess your feelings for Frank.
Which actually caught me off guard, because that's not part of the game.
Okay.
Like, Kat just added that detail Like, we had been telling the secret, and I thought we were closing in on the end of the game, and then Kat just drops, yeah, I thought we were going to talk about how we weren't going to be roommates anymore, and my reaction of, like, wait, you don't want to be roommates anymore? Was, like, completely genuine, because I was just like, that's not, wait, oh, okay. This is now, like, okay, this is the game, our conversation is going in another direction. Even better, and it, like, adds this whole other level to the conversation that we're having, because suddenly we both have secrets. It was a well executed twist.
Kat's performance and what she did in this episode was great as well. Like, I loved that she played the character for a long period of time. Like, she didn't believe what you were saying, like you were making it up or having like, but being serious about it too, like still trying to figure out what was wrong with Meg to make her think she's an android. And the moment that the switch flips for her character, for Frank, like it's,
oh, I love it. I love that moment so much.
It was one of those things that made me stop and like pay attention to what was happening. Like, this episode 144 is just filled with great moments like that, where it doesn't let you forget that you're listening to a podcast and a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's not often for, I think, actual plays. There's some actual plays that are out there that can turn into just background noise. This, you guys did not let that happen. This episode, the story, the characters, none of that was allowed to happen because of what you guys did as a team, as individuals.
Can I talk about my absolute favorite? Now that actually reminds me of my absolute favorite moment of the entire episode.
What's that?
When Frank says to Meg, like, I think you're a robot. And starts, like, asking questions. And then we do 1 minute. You get 1 minute to wear a tinfoil hat. We had not, that was not a discussed thing. That was just Kat, like, as soon as I said that and I said, go, Kat just screams, weapons platforms. And I'm like, and, like, for the next minute is just throwing questions at me. And, like, then it's time. We'll talk about more later. But it's the immediate moment when I say go and just weapons platforms, right? Are there? And I'm like, it's such a good tiny little moment.
Yeah. And it's, it goes like, cause to my knowledge, Kat doesn't have any formal improv training, the way some of the other, one shot people, have had in the past. But I could be speaking out of turn. I don't know that, just kind of based off conversations I've heard on their other shows when she was still with the network. So like to see how great she is on her feet, was like just super refreshing to see that that's possible. Like just people can be that genuinely good at a form of comedy or just a form of storytelling.
It was fantastic. It was, I love that episode. I really am proud of that episode.
As a listener, it was definitely looking forward to it on the surface because of the guest, because of the type of game it was. Like it was obviously this game is built for two players, so it's built for your show. And it was just a even better like dessert that I was not expecting by the time I was done listening to it. I knew I was going to like it, but it just, it blew me out of the water. What's it like? Is that a show that, or a game rather that involves, much prep or is it a, kind of like a zero prep game?
100% zero prep, which actually, I want to tell the story of how I almost did, like when I mentioned that episode almost didn't happen. It worked out really nicely that we played a zero prep game. Cause I had accidentally triple booked myself that day.
Oh my God.
Like had booked a recording in the morning. I had and did not piece it together until somebody messaged me and was like, hey, we're recording at 11, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, I have a recording at 11, an in-person game with friends at 2, and then I'm coming back to record with Kat at 8:30. And I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna have to cancel something. And I didn't cancel anything, and I'm super glad that I didn't. But yeah, the game requires zero prep. It is just, you sit down, you pick a secret, and you kind of play out the conversation.
And I think we can, as we get to some of these other games, we might be able to discover what a day or an episode is like when it does involve a lot of prep. I think I'm done with 1-4-V-4. Is there anything else that you have about that episode that you want to, you know, let everyone know about or that you just, you don't think we mentioned?
No, I think we pretty much got everything.
Episode 145, is, a game that's in, actually I believe it probably ended by now.
I think it may have literally ended moments ago. I'm not sure though. Yeah.
But it was at the time of, this episode airing, it was a game that was in the process of, being kickstarted. It's part of a greater universe of games, which is super interesting as well. Yes. North Sea Epilogues, and your guest was the designer of that game, right? Tim Devine?
Yes, Tim Devine. Yeah.
So tell me, and this is one of those, and it's not so much a rare occurrence anymore. It's kind of, I don't want to say common, but it's not uncommon to see you take on the role of player versus DM.
Yeah, it's
or GM.
A little more common now that people have heard the show a little bit more. People are a little more willing to be like, oh, I'll run this for you.
Yeah. And it definitely, like, it's, you can tell, you know, this time 2 years ago, I think it was like a rare occurrence to happen.
Yeah.
So this is one of those games where it's you are playing it. I'm sure that makes it a lot easier when it comes to a game that's really not known to anyone right now because it's in the Kickstarter phase. So my notes are pretty light on this one simply because this is, I don't know. I was too invested in listening to the story, because it's one of those stories that, that does demand you to not multitask, mm-hmm. because it takes place in Viking times, correct?
Yes. It's sort of it's not quite historical Viking mm-hmm. fiction, but it's sort of a hair off from it, as opposed to a game we played slightly before the recording window, which was Iron Edda Accelerated, which is extremely mythological. This one is like very historical. This one is very historically based. This one was very, I did not realize until during the episode when I kind of alluded to a monster, and then Tim is like, well, what's interesting is that there's actually no monsters. And I was like, and that was actually kind of the moment that it really like clicked for me. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that I wasn't really excited to play the game, but that was because I had not really like gotten to dig into a lot of the materials for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was the moment that I was like, oh, this is going to be okay. This really puts a whole different spin on like where my character's head is at. And that's really interesting.
And now, are you familiar with the North Sea universe of games? Like, cause I've never, now I'm not into the board game world at all, really, save for like the classics. So are you familiar with the universe, or was this your first, like,
this was my first introduction to the franchise was through this game. And honestly, I walked away from it kind of being like, I could check out those other games. Like they actually kind of sound pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like a fun world to play in, because it's for me at least, like it's, I do dig the things that are that kind of feel like they are mythological, but they are actually kind of history based. So you don't have the crazy monsters, and whatnot, and that kind of fiction is something that does like, I love watching that kind of fiction or reading that kind of fiction or participating in it.
Yeah.
Does Tim come from the world of North Sea, or did he just have this idea with his wife? I believe
I'm not 100%. Tim, if you're listening to this episode, feel free to correct us. Feel free. I'm Tim. This is my sign of how much I like Tim. Tim, if you're listening to this, I give you and you alone permission to at me. Everybody else, do not at me. Tim, at me. I believe he is a fan of the games, and then they kind of the makers of the games approached him and Kristen to like create the role playing game version of the games.
Okay. Yeah. Because when you're dealing with like a franchise of some sort, I'm guessing it's not necessarily difficult to adapt from a game board to a role playing game. It's just the what were the mechanics like? You know, that was something I didn't really pick up on while listening to it. And it sounds like you guys did some stuff that was off mic for your Patreon. So that might be why. What were the mechanics like? What was it similar to in the world of role playing?
I would say it had a little bit of D20 in it. Everything was based on rolling a 20-sided dice. There was a little bit of maybe like Numenera or Fate, where like it was based on kind of degrees of success. Like every X amount over the number you rolled got you an advantage, and every X amount under a number like did you some strain. And then kind of there was a certain degree of like, you succeeded, now dictate what happens next. But a lot of it was based on like a single 20-sided dice roll.
Okay. And that, I mean, I feel like the only thing that might be easier than that, and this is me coming from like only listening to a lot of role-playing games, I feel like the Apocalypse, Powered by the Apocalypse system, where it just uses D6s, that's like the mm-hmm. only system that's easier than using a single die of some sort, because it's, I don't know, I've listened to, I mean, aside from Party of One, one of my first actual play podcasts that I listened to was Too Cool for Tabletop, which was heavy mm-hmm. in Dungeon World when it aired. So that just, it seems like that's a simple system to learn and do. Like, you don't necessarily need to be familiar with role-playing games to play and get and understand a game that's powered by the apocalypse.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of the, I like using that game to teach people to like role-playing games. I think the Apocalypse World systems, the Powered by the Apocalypse games, are great for like showing somebody like, this is what role-playing games do.
Mm-hmm. And this seems like, just from what you said and what listening to it, maybe like a step above that in being quote unquote more complex than that a system. I don't know. What do you think? Does it feel like it's more complex than something like Powered by the Apocalypse?
Yeah, I guess I would probably say it depends on the Powered by the Apocalypse game. I think there are some of them that use that system to kind of build a fairly complex kind of environment. But I'd say it's probably about on par with like the more complicated Powered by the Apocalypse games, like something like a Masks or a Monster Hearts, where it's got a lot of kind of fiddly bits mixed in. I would probably compare it to something like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, it definitely is, and maybe not so much 5e D&D. That I seem to have like a pretty firm grasp on, but definitely like a lot of the other Dungeons and Dragons, they can be a little hard to understand compared to even what you guys played with North Sea Epilogues. On your end, what is there, you know, for this type of game where you're not running anything, how much prep are you doing before you hit record?
I am thinking about the character that I want to play. I'd say the prep that I do when I'm playing a game, especially when somebody is bringing a game to me, because Tim approached me when he was promoting the game. He was like, hey, I'm a super big fan of the show. I would love to feature this game and promote it when we do the Kickstarter. Can you make that happen? And I said, yeah, of course, I'd love to. And so, you know, what I'd say more of the prep for me when I'm in kind of that position where somebody is bringing me a game is prepping the production side of things, or like the technical podcasting side of things, and then making sure that my guest like understands the rhythms of how to like manage an actual play podcast. I'm kind of backseat driving in that sense, where like I will sit down beforehand and be like, here's the rhythm of the game. Make sure that, you know, keep it to about, I'll kind of let them know, like, plan a session around 90 minutes. If we end short, we end short, but that's kind of an episode length. And I kind of give them the run through. We talk a little bit. We do the Patreon extra stuff, which you mentioned. We do character creation and stuff like that as a Patreon extra, partially so that I can kind of like coach them through like being comfortable on the mic, which Tim didn't really need that. Like, he was fairly comfortable because he's done podcasts before, but being able to sit through and be like, this is how it's going to go. I'm going to throw it over to you. This is the process of the show. You're pretty familiar with it. You know, the past me, future me bit, like you understand the stuff that we're going to be doing, making sure that like, and the other big thing is, honestly, making sure that they're not nervous, because I've had a lot of guests who came on to run a thing and then they get really nervous, and making sure they're like, look, it's just playing a game. Ignore the microphone. Ignore everything except you and me just hanging out playing a game. You're going to be great. And you know what? They're consistently great.
Yeah. And I would imagine, especially when it's a game that you have someone on that's running their own thing. Like, it's I mean, I don't know. I can't say that I've heard anyone run a game bad on your show. So they're right. Whatever you're doing to help coach them. And I agree. Like, there's plenty of times I'll sit down and I'll have an hour and a half to 2 hour conversation with somebody, and I still air the whole thing. But like, really, the first 20 minutes of the conversation, maybe half hour, is a real struggle because they're not used to talking on a microphone. They're not a podcaster.
And it's an element. There's an element of like teaching them to ignore that the thing is there, teaching them like, hey, like, you're talking into a computer right now. Yeah. Pretend you're not doing that.
Yeah. And sometimes you just need, like, you know, it's amazing how many people are podcasters or love talking and love being podcasters. But when they first sit down and talk with you or sit mm-hmm. down and play a game with you or whatever it is, like they're just super like, I don't know you. So like, I'm kind of an introvert and they just need that extra half hour to like open up.
I had
a guest like that where we sat down for an hour on his show. It was kind of awkward, but he had a structure, so it was less so. He comes on to my show where there's no structure, and we already had the hour of prep to have a conversation, so it all worked out. Now is North Sea Epilogues, was this did Tim have to hack this for two player, or is this meant for two player, is it meant for a group?
I believe I can say it's definitely meant for a group. It was definitely hacked for two players, but I will also say I don't think it was hacked a lot. Like, it played very naturally with two players. There wasn't a lot of stuff that needed to be kind of either left out or adapted.
And because we barely touched on the story, but I do want to move on to the next episode. So let's touch on the story a little bit.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite understand your character's name, and that might be my fault for listening at 1.5 times speed. Was it Twervy?
Twervy. T-O-R-V-I.
Okay. Because I definitely, the first time I was like, Corvy? What the hell is a Corvy? And then I heard it said again. I was like, oh, Twervy makes a little bit more sense. So Twervy, please, you know, tell me a little bit and tell the audience a little bit about Twervy and kind of like the night she'll never forget kind of adventure she had.
Twervy was, at the start of the story, a kind of disgraced former hunter, or rather tracker. She was an expert tracker who had, in pursuit of something larger than normal, she had lost her prey, people got hurt, and she had been kind of low-key banished to this outpost in the middle of nowhere, away from her two partners. And her sort of purpose was to regain her honor, do what she does best, and like save the day. Basically, her real only motivation was like, get home to the women that I love. Like that was her objective. At the start of the story, raiders invade the fort that she's stationed at, and her whole sort of objective is to get to the sort of beacon fire and sort of light the signal fire so that the other outposts along the coastline will all sort of light up and all of their sort of reinforcements will come to this outpost and save people so that the raiders who are trying to overtake this fort will not get to the other sort of places along the coastline.
And yeah, it was neat listening to the story. I definitely... You can tell the story being told with just two people, with one player really, and the GM. You could see, I think, how the game was, I don't want to say affected, was tweaked to mm-hmm. to handle that. But yeah, it was a fun little. I don't want to say short because it was I think over an hour the whole episode.
I think it's just over an hour. I think it ends at maybe an hour or five.
Yeah, yeah, and that's with your intros and outros too. But yeah, it wasn't like super fantastical in the sense that it wasn't mythology based. Like it was a nice grounded. That's the word I want. It was a nice grounded
story. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, and it was I enjoyed it. It was just one of those ones that like I had on and I was able to enjoy it and I was able to just kind of go along for the ride with Twervy and experience what she experienced through, you know, through you and Tim.
I also really like the ending to that episode. Like when Tim and I both kind of knew that the story had reached its conclusion, and I'm just kind of like, hey, can I like give my ending note, and Twervy just walks through the tent and is like, hey, I'm home. Mm-hmm. It's like a real good moment. Like I got real happy about that.
Yeah. And that's what I really like. And it's obviously because it's your show. You I don't want to say you do it off. You probably do it almost all the time, which is good because you take, A lot of times you'll take control at the very end, like when you sense the game's ending, or when, mm-hmm. when the game has already kind of end, like the GM has ended the game, and you'll kind of say, well, let me tweak it a little bit. You take the reins back a little bit to make sure that the story closes on a great note, like a fantastic, I don't want to keep saying fantastic, but like just the, you send them home happy, as they say in the rest mm-hmm. of the business.
Yeah, that's great
that you're not afraid to do that, which I don't think you would be as your host, but like it's someone else is running the show, but you do kind of take the reins just to steer it in to a perfect landing.
Oh yeah. I like a good ending. I'm a sucker for, I love a good cliffhanger, which is why a lot of when I take the reins, I add in that last little like kicker. I'm a big fan. You know what I'm a big sucker for? And I think it shows in one of the episodes we're not going to be talking about. I am the hugest sucker for Crypt Keeper comics.
Oh, yeah.
I love, and the way that like your average Crypt Keeper comic ends, where it like just they twist that knife in the last panel, where it's like, oh, you think you're out, psych. I am such a sucker for that. And it's probably a party of one cliche where like when I take the reins, it's just so that I can twist that knife that little bit and add that last Crypt Keeper panel of like, but also this happened.
Yeah.
Whoops.
And that is something that, cause you had, and I forget what the game was, but you did an episode that was very influenced by Tales from
the Grave. That was Stories from the Grave. Stories from the Grave.
Yes. I loved that one so much. And something that I'll probably explain a little bit in a break that's going to happen right about now. Just so that you know, Jeff, I do want to kind of run special episodes of this once we get the show off the ground, to where we kind of go back to the Party of One archive and we go back to those past episodes. And whether it's me doing something intimate like this, where it's me and you talking, or me sitting down talking with a designer or talking with the guest, I want to do this show for, because there's 143 episodes before this show started that we can kind of dive into. There's a lot of, like, Our Radios is Dying is something that I always talk about when I bring up your show. So that's something that I really want to dive in. Yeah. It is probably still like to this date, which that was really early on in your run. Like maybe episode 14, if I'm remembering correctly.
It's in the first 20. I think it's literally immediately after the first time you were on the show.
Oh, okay. That is, I think, still my favorite, one of my favorite episodes. I won't say my favorite, but definitely
it's a good episode.
So that is something that I have planned to go back to the archive. And we're back.
Good break.
Let's chat Scarlet Heroes. Unless there's, you know what? I didn't let you wrap up anything with North Sea Epilogues. Is there anything?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I think it was a great episode. I will say the last thing I'll say is just that, again, I think, In going with the theme of everyone is great, Tim was a delight.
Yeah.
What, like, it's really nice to, this is me kind of addressing the fact that I've been doing this for 150 episodes. Mm. It's kind of nice to play with somebody sometimes that like has heard a lot of the show. Cause I think, you know, Tim definitely like picked up on the rhythms of it. And I was very comfortable with him in the director's chair, for lack of a better term, because I was like, you know what, like, and he clearly like knew. He was like, okay, here's what's going to happen now. We're at about 45 minutes. Here's where the game kicks into high gear. Like he got it, and I credit that a lot to him being a naturally very talented storyteller, because afterwards, as soon as we ended, you know, I end all of our recordings with "Take It, Future Me," and I always get a little giddy when my guest goes, oh, that was the future me bit. Oh, you're going to say past me later. It's going to be great. And I always get giddy about that because I still laugh at that bit 150 episodes later. Yeah. Like when I'm syncing up audio tracks, I'm like, it's a good bit. It's funny.
It's such a fun bit that like, and because I've listened to the show now for 147, 48, whatever is released as of today, as a recording, I love that bit. I've listened to it for all those episodes to the point where I'll catch myself when I do one of my post intros and outros, I'll say, all right, I want to throw it to past me. And then I've definitely stolen the bit and have used it once or twice. Just like,
that's not, fine. I love
not
it.
Knowing it. Yeah. Like it's not, cause I never, it's never, ever, ever, me in the seat with my guest saying, all right, future me, take it. I never do that bit, but I will say often because of your show, past me. Because I don't know, it's I have no idea why it's ingrained in my head now, at least.
It's just a good bit.
So episode 146 was the third episode of September, Scarlet Heroes, with your guest. Did you mark out when you had Travis there?
I played it cool. I probably did the thing when you're really excited, when you play it like too cool.
Yeah.
I played it real cool, but I was real excited. I got real giddy.
Travis Huckabee, who is a wrestler, he does a lot of work with Chikara, which anyone that's listening to this has to know your love for Chikara. If not,
I'm a big Chikara fan. I've been a big Chikara fan for a very long time, and I'm lucky enough to be like friends with some of the people involved in Chikara now. Mm-hmm. That like sometimes opportunities like that pop up, and it's still the coolest experience.
Yeah.
Like, it's still cool to just do things that you like with people that you like with people that you like respect.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of a recurrent theme between really all four of these episodes is like a person that does a thing that I enjoy, I'm doing a thing with, and that's cool.
Yeah. I love, like when I got Mike Quackenbush on Everything Is Awesome, that I had that feeling. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, how did this happen? How did I trick him? Like, this isn't happening to me at all. So, I can't say anything yet, but like, I'm experiencing one of those things. Like as of 7 o'clock this evening, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to book this interview. So spoilers,
we'll talk off mic.
I guess it's not spoilers for these people, but it will be one day. And you did, like, you were able to work in your love for Chikara in a nice little like 30-second beat in the show, which is always, anytime I hear you talk about Chikara, it brings a smile to my face, because to have that passion about mm-hmm. something, not many people have that passion for anything, and you have it for Chikara amongst other things, but definitely for Chikara. And I love, like, whenever I talk about Chikara to people, I was like, listen, I wish I had like the I think 20-minute conversation of just Chikara talk that Jeff and I did, because when he talks about why he loves Chikara, it literally brings a tear to my eye.
That's it's how, good. It's yeah. real good. It's just real good. When it's good, it's pretty much the best.
So Scarlet Heroes, now this is, correct me if I'm wrong, because Scarlet Heroes, we kind of briefly, I think off mic, talked about the game tonight.
Yes.
But from what I gathered, this is kind of based off of some old school like D&D, right?
It is. Yeah, it is very specifically, Scarlet Heroes is very specifically D&D for a single character. It is based off of, you know, the old like red, like old D&D. It is based very explicitly on Dungeons and Dragons, and it is very specifically replicating that D&D experience. It's just with one character instead of a party of four, and it is sort of the purest possible D&D experience.
But what throws me for a loop, and I remember reading like some random manual that I found that I was reading about. I think it's actually Daggers, maybe, for the role playing game that's made for kids. I think it's called Daggers. They do something similar where like you add the armor class to your role.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of current day Dungeons and Dragons.
I always house rule it where I'm just like, just do the thing where higher is better, because I don't feel like trying to do math today.
I think you mentioned it once, and I don't know, you know, with editing or whatnot, it was mentioned once in the actual recording. And I was like, oh no, like this is like a real mathy game.
And it's the only part of it that's real mathy, and it just gets, and I just get annoyed. It's the one thing about that game I don't really like is how it approaches armor class, because I find it a little obtrusive. It gets in the way.
Yeah, because I can't think of another system, even if it's a complicated system, that makes like that aspect of a game, like the battle, the fighting of the game. I don't know any other game that really makes it that hard to figure it out. I'm sure there's some out there, but even systems that are complicated, like they still kind of figure out that mechanic to work within their scheme.
Yeah. The old school D&D is real, like, influenced by war games, and so it has a lot of more math to it than it probably needs, is if we're being honest.
But I liked, the name that Travis picked for his character. The one thing you guys didn't prep was Goose. I love that. I don't know if I liked it as like because of his reasoning of it being Grey Goose, or it kind of sounding, I don't know, it just reminded me of Top Gun for some reason.
I was thinking about Top Gun as well. I tried to fit in a Top Gun joke, and it just, there was nowhere I could get it in there. It just didn't work.
But I really liked the character being half-orc, and I think it simply is because I recently picked up the 5e Player's Handbook to start. So I want to start playing D&D like on a somewhat regular basis. So I picked up the Player Handbook, and I read a little bit of, on that section of the races, the half-orc, and it just intrigues me because it really is the way he, and I don't know how much you influenced it, but the way that his character, the Goose, felt kind of like he didn't belong in either world of orc or human. Like that is such, I don't know. To me, that's an interesting story element.
I dug it a lot, and Travis really well played off of it very well.
Yeah, and now this is a game that I feel like going back to the prep. You've had basically two episodes in a row where on your end, it was, as far as the game was concerned, kind of light prep. This seems like it's a game where there's going to be a lot more prep for you.
There was a lot of prep. There was me sitting down and mapping out like theoretical dungeons. I've read, there's a lot of, I was relying on, there's an article about like the 5-room dungeon that basically says like you can have a dungeon experience in about 5 rooms, and breaking down a lot of like plot points as quote unquote dungeon rooms, where I'm like, okay, you're going to come to this plot point. You're either going to interact with it through a skill challenge and go to point A, or you're going to try to fight something and go to point B. Depending on where you go, you might rejoin at point C, or you might go to D and E. So I basically mapped out a little like plot dungeon. So like a flow chart.
Yeah.
And like had mapped this out and kind of winged a little bit of it, you know, the details, but I had the mechanical basis of like, I'm going to ask you for a skill challenge. How you do on that is going to determine if you end up here and have to fight something, or if you end up here and you have the opportunity to interact with someone and get an advantage that way.
And this, I don't know why because you've played this on the show before, because Scarlet Heroes is not, right, this is not the first time I'm hearing this in Party of One.
No, we've played it, I think at least 3 times. Because we played it with Jason from Too Cool for Tabletop. That was episode 3 of the show.
Okay.
We played it with Nick Murphy from Continue, Dustin from New Game Plus, at least once more, I think. But I'm not sure.
I don't know why, because every time I hear it, I'm like, and without reading the description, I'll just see, like, on my phone, it will pop up, oh, Party of One, Scarlet Heroes. Like, oh, we're going to have, a Capes episode. And it's
people keep thinking that. I'm not really sure where that comes from. I think it comes from the words heroes, but, like, I have seen people on Twitter be like, yeah, so I saw Party of One played Scarlet Heroes. I think that's kind of like a superhero thing, and I'm like, it's not.
And I'm someone who listens. I've listened to the other incarnations of Scarlet Heroes, and I should know better. But it's something about that name, and I think it's not just Heroes. I mean, Heroes has a big thing with it, but I think Scarlet just reminds to me. I'll tell you what it reminds me. It reminds me of Superman. Reminds me of Superman.
That's fair. That makes a lot of sense, actually, when you say it like that.
And that's why I think I because as soon as he said Travis said he was playing a half-orc, I was like, well, clearly. Clearly, we're not in the world of superheroes and capes now.
We could be. That'd be pretty cool.
That would be a nice hack of the game. But so this was like just kind of a great traditional dungeon D&D type of game. I really liked that his goal was I don't want to, that's not necessarily selfish, but definitely not selfless, where he just wanted to get a bunch of money to retire.
Yeah, for sure.
And that there's something about that that just seems, I don't know, kind of real American, I guess, to me.
It was good. There was a lot I liked about that episode. And like the thing that I really enjoyed about it is Travis is a very technical, kind of grounded, very serious guy. Mm-hmm. You know, like he is a very grappler of a guy. Mm-hmm. And he came to me, he was like, I want to do the show. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, what do you want to do? And he's like, I want to do like D&D. And I was like, okay, cool. What do you want to do? I want to do a dude that like grapples and like fights. And I was like, okay, cool. And so like, it was very much kind of, it was a lot of fun to knowing that he was coming in with sort of the idea, like, and you kind of hear it when he first starts of this idea of like, okay, I'm doing this thing. Oh boy. And then like hearing him like have fun with it was a lot of fun.
And I really did love how, and I don't know how it came across to non-wrestling fans, but there to me there was a lot of, and not necessarily wrestler talk, not the carny talk that they do, but wrestling lingo like grappling and shoulder tackles and I think I heard some suplex.
We call it a match. I mean, my wife, my producer Jen Frank, edited that episode. She edits about half of the episodes. I edit the other half of the episodes. She edited that one and she was like, you realize you called it the big fight with a demon at the end. You called it a match like halfway through. And I'm like, yep, I definitely did that, didn't I? I definitely just dropped all pretense that we weren't just playing out a wrestling match by the end of that fight.
and it's funny because for me, that's kind of how early on when I would write how all my action stuff would come across, because that's what I knew. Like not only when I started writing fiction, I was a wrestling fan. I watched the WWE at the time, or WWF at the time, or whatever it was all those years ago. And I myself was wrestling in the backyard when I first started writing, but I still, all my, I never got into a real fight. So like everything was, In my descriptions of my action sequences was very wrestling based, like back body drops and suplexes and just silly stuff like that. That is can be. I mean, if you look at some action fights, it's all in there.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Just don't name it that way. So wrestling and just like and I've talked to this with improvers, like improv role playing games and wrestling. Those three industries share so much with one another.
So much common ground. Wrestling is just maybe the world's oldest LARP is what it is, more than anything.
I stand by that. That's I want to say, I think I've heard you make that analogy before, and yes, that's 100% accurate. Like that's you're grown men and women dressing up and making pretend, and it's a little bit more grounded in 2018. It's a little less.
Sometimes silly. We are also talking about Chikara.
That's right. Chikara is, and it's, I still need to, like, I don't watch it as much as I should. I pay them.
It's good. It's worth the time investment.
Oh yeah, and what it is, I finally found a way to watch it on my phone because I don't have a lot of time to watch it not on my phone. So I finally found a way to watch it. So I'm gonna be watching it a lot more. It's just, I don't know about you. I have Netflix. I have that. I have the DC Universe now. I have all these things. I'm gonna have Disney at some point, I'm sure. There's too much out there, and podcasting. I have that too. Mm-hmm. There's too much to listen to.
Too much stuff.
Watch. We live in a great time, but yeah, no, Scarlett, this listening to, and maybe it's because it's just the most recent, edition of Scarlett Heroes that you've done, but listening to it and talking it out, with you both off mic tonight and now, it's become like, I want to play it. Like I want to do Scarlett Heroes. It seems like it's a nice blend of, like, easy kind of, not, I don't want to say easy, but like kind of quick turnaround time to play the game and having the traditional D&D experience.
It is, if somebody comes to me and says, I want to play D&D, at this point in the show, I am comfortable saying I don't really want to play Dungeons and Dragons. I'd rather play Scarlet Heroes because it is specifically kind of engineered for that. And D&D is sort of not. So like it kind of I feel like I'm able to be like, this game is going to do more of what you want when you say you want to play D&D.
And when it comes to, say, prepping or hacking a game, like this has prep, but zero hack versus, I imagine, D&D 5e or whatever, D&D 5, D&D 4e, whatever. Those ones, you need to do a lot of work to make it mm-hmm. work for
yeah, a exactly. player. Right? Scarlet Heroes is built for that, like explicitly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just, again, it's one of these games that are kind of made for your show, and it just, it works. It's again, there's a reason that you've played it numerous times. It just, it works. And it's, this was, again, a particularly good story that just made me kind of really listen to the mechanics this time around. And I don't know, it really caught my eye. And I think it has to do with, we talked about it a lot tonight, even off mic. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well. But yeah, it was a great, just a great true fantasy story being told that I really dug, and Travis was great and had a lot of fun. I loved the wrestling aspects of it. Yeah, it was a good time. That being said, we're going to move on to mm-hmm. the final episode of the month. Again, unless there's anything else about 146 that you have to say.
No, I think that pretty much covers it. Like I will say, in terms of prep, I knew I was going to make that a wrestling match. The moment that he was like, I want to play D&D. I want to do D&D. Yeah. I want to do that. I was like, I'm going to make you wrestle a guy. I was like, I'm going to make that happen. And so like, it was me doing that from moment one.
You have to, if you have a wrestler on, you have to make it that way, right?
You have to, you gotta lean into it a little bit.
Yeah. So episode 147, the final episode that released in September, mm-hmm. this one is fresh for everyone's minds, but I do, if you're listening this far and you haven't listened to the other episodes, what are you doing? Go back and listen, especially if I had to pick the two episodes of the month that were my personal favorites, and it's hard. It's really hard to pick out of these four because they were all strong, but it was episode 144. With mm-hmm. Kat, and this episode that we're about to talk about, episode 147, Deniable, that you played with guest Kent Blue. Mm-hmm. These two games, and I think it's because they were, I don't know, it just seemed, I guess I could hear the improv in it because there was no prep for these games.
Yes. There's Deniable is explicitly a zero prep game. It actually says in the rule book that you are not allowed to prep anything.
Yeah. And
sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying that I love that aspect of it because, again, this to me is a game that you can use to get people into role playing.
Oh yeah,
because there's no prep, so you don't have to do. I don't want to. I love character creation, but there's people that don't like that part of it, and mm-hmm. that takes time to get to the point where you can actually play a game. Like I want to say, when one of the last groups that I played with, we had a day where we just did character creation, or the GM had like special meetings with all of us to help do character creation with us, and then we finally all met to play the game. This doesn't involve that.
No, it involves a few dice rolls and scripting out your character's life, and then you just go from there.
And I got to say that Kent's character's name is possibly one of the greatest role-playing game names I've ever heard. Carl Devitt Burns. Like that, there's something about that name that I love.
That's a good name. That's a real good name.
And I love, I just love that. I mean, you know what this reminded me of? As soon as I read the description of it, I was like, I honestly thought, I was like, is he playing Mission Accomplished? Did he hack his own game?
It's definitely, there's definitely a lot of common DNA. And if I could have held on to this for a few weeks, I honestly might have released it on Kickstarter drop day. Mm-hmm. But like things just shook out and I was like, let's just release it now. But like in terms of silly spy games, it's definitely like, it has a lot of shared DNA.
Well, and it's almost like you could play Deniable. And now is Deniable explicitly a two-player game? Can it be more of a group?
Actually, I just had a conversation, like a brief conversation. It was a Facebook comment, but the designer of the game had like saw that I had posted the episode and was like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm really curious if it could actually work with two, because like the core charm of the game is that you're playing very ordinary people. And it encourages the other people at the table to play like family members and other like ordinary people that are tied to your life. So like you might be in a scene. So for instance, if we were in a larger group, when we were in the scene in the park, another player could slide in and be like, oh, and I'm probably your coworker in the trash truck telling you to get back in the truck and go to work. But like, it's sort of that idea that you're all kind of playing side characters in every scene.
Yeah, it was, and this is a game that I feel like you could play Deniable, and then instantly roll into Mission Accomplished and play the outcome of what you did in Deniable and Mission Accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like it feels like they go hand in hand.
You could play the same characters for sure.
Yeah. And, or maybe you do a different mission with that's another conversation.
Yeah, with the same, I totally get what you mean. Yeah. You could definitely, they're definitely in the same cinematic universe.
Yeah. I feel like there could be a lot of fun, you could have a nice live event, with these two games back to back with a couple podcasts. That's what I think what drew me to this is because I really do love Mission Accomplished, and this is, it's very much in that vein, and it's also just silly. I really like, as much as I love the traditional fantasy stuff, and I do like the historical stuff that North Sea Epilogues brought to the table. I really, silly is my bag. Like, that is what I love. I'm a comedy person, so this was in my wheelhouse. It was hard to fail me, and I love the mechanics of just kind of rolling. I know you rolled your traits and abilities, or you assigned dice for your abilities. Did you roll family too?
Everything on there except for him as a garbage man that makes diorama. I believe those were things that Kent chose. I don't remember, but I know that like family was randomly generated. Like the details of the mission might have been, or it might have been me just riffing. But like your traits, your families, and your drama are all like randomly generated.
And I there's those games, like there's a lot of one page games that are like that. Like what's his name, Grant Hallett, I believe he makes a lot of those games that are in this same vein, and I love hearing those games played out. I love reading those games with hopes to play them with the non-existent time I have. I think what also made this game work is because it's no prep, it's also heavy role play because you're improvising the whole time. So whereas the two games that were sandwiched in between your two heavy role playing games, there's mechanics that you work through. That I don't want to say derail, but there's a pause in the actual role playing.
This was all scene play. This was all me playing. Just, I give Kent so much credit because like he could have come in and he played a little bit of a wacky character, but like he could have played like, well, I'm wacky. But like the fact that he immediately was like, this is my character. I'm real simple and down to earth. And it meant that like, because we had what is essentially a straight man character, that like I really got to just be the most ridiculous side characters.
Yeah,
it played so perfectly, and I kind of expected to play like the serious half, and so when he came in with the character, I was like, cool, fun. This is going to be very interesting.
I honestly don't know that it would have worked with Kent playing like a real wacky out of this world character, even if he was the same garbage man hoarder and built dioramas. Like if he played that super wacky, I don't know that it would have worked, because even though this was fun and it was silly and whatnot, there were beats that I was like, oh man, like I feel for this guy.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he found the he found the pathos of that character. Like he made me care about that character in such a real way, and I'm so happy about that.
I mean, at the end, like when the, and I don't know if this game is designed to have a lot of failures so that your character is pushed to death, but the fact that like basically like Kent just rolled not that great throughout the game.
Yeah, so he didn't roll great.
Like at the very end, there's a moment where I'm like, I can't, but like I was gonna feel sadness for losing Carl, the garbage man turned spy, and again, you did that very great twist where you know there's potential to get more Carl in our lives down the mm-hmm. line, and the I'll tell you the other twist I really liked, and I don't think I wrote it down here, but the uncle being the guy he was supposed to pick up in bags, mm-hmm. like was that a result of a dice roll, or was that kind of always in your head?
I think that was mostly the result of a dice roll, because if it wasn't the result of a dice roll, it was guided by the GMing materials Indeniable. Mm-hmm. Because it says in the game to like make sure that whatever the mission is, that their family is like immediately inextricably involved, that like okay. that like what you're doing has to be like, oh, my family is right there. So as soon as I had created the scenario where you were gonna go pick up somebody in body bags, I was like, it's gotta be one of the family members that he came up with. And he had dropped the line about like, he's always making these gadgets, and I was like, oh, but that's really good. If his uncle, who's always making wacky gadgets, is part of like chaos or whatever, like Hydra, if his uncle is just like a Hydra agent and he just never clicked, if he's like, yeah, I make gadgets, I also make bombs. Like, I was like, that's gotta be the twist.
And what I love is that the way that it ended up being played out is that like, it should have been very obvious to Carl mm-hmm. that his whole family was involved with what ends up being the bad guys. Like there was a moment that I was like, maybe the organization is the bad guys here, but it really you don't hide the fact that like the uncle eventually says, yeah, like I do bad things.
Yeah, I'm a bad guy.
And I love that, like, that for Carl, it was still like at the end of the day, family first, despite the fact that he has a complicated relationship with his family and wanted to get away from his family and go to Fiji.
Mm-hmm.
As we're talking about, like, the story, I'm appreciating even more now. Like, it was just a fantastic story. It was fun. It was silly. This along with 144 with Kat is more in vain of like the campaign series of podcasts where it's just consistent role play, like mm-hmm. it's just, and that's like, oh, that's so my bag, because that's when you have, even if it's a silly podcast, even if it's a silly episode like Deniable here, it's when you can have the roller coaster of emotions. And I didn't get to the point where I was crying during this episode, but I definitely had my heartstrings pulled mm-hmm. for Carl at certain points.
Oh, and that's all just Kent being so dang good at what he's doing is like we're playing this silly game. We both know it's a silly game, and where it's a game that like he's supposed to be playing somebody that has no business being a spy. And then out of nowhere, he sits down. He's like, yeah, I have a really relatable character that's got a lot going on. And it just makes the comedy and the tragedy, like, it makes both of those sing, because he's a real person. Even if he's like an oddball, he is somebody that you could meet. And it makes the fact that he's in this unwinnable situation, where you mentioned that like the his uncle is definitely the bad guy, the organization is also the bad guy. There's no good guys here except for Carl. Carl is the good guy.
Yeah, Carl is the ultimate, like, he's just that, I just love the concept of, and I guess it's just built into the game, of it being everyday Joe turning into a super spy.
That's explicitly the game, and the rule book describes them as exceedingly ordinary people.
Yeah, and I think out of the for me, and I won't ask you this because you are the host and of your show, and I'm they're all your favorite, and I don't want to say necessarily my favorite. Out of these four episodes, I think the game that I want to play the most, as much as I really like that first one with Kat, that one is I already kind of did a game like that and it failed. I need a little bit more work, I think, with my improv to get better at that. But this game seems like it's a little bit sillier, and allows for me to like this is the game. Deniable seems like the one that I would like want to play next in the next week or so, just because it seems like so much fun, and there's no prep. You can play it with anybody. And just have a good old time.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you for being the first guest.
Worries. I have one
after
more thing.
Talk show.
I have one more thing, yes. I want to talk about in the Denial episode, and that is
okay.
How much I loved playing that piece of trash secret agent. With two ice cream cones in hand, because now I have twice as much ice cream.
Well, that was real good. I love that without like make. I don't know. I don't know what it is. You play like a great good guy or a great good person. Great, like that. You do that really well, but you also this character, John Doe, is not the first time you've played like kind of a swarmy mm-hmm. character. You do that real well too.
Thank you. I like playing that kind of character. I'm always fascinated by just real slimy is a good word for it. Just people that you just don't want to interact with and who are just too polished for their own good are some of my favorite characters. It's why I wrote a role-playing game entirely about those kind of characters.
Yes. Well, and I was about to say, even though it will probably be mentioned in the show notes and in the intro and the outro probably, please tell everybody, where they can find you, B, what you got going on, because you got something big happening, and anything else that you need to tell the fine folks out there listening to this show.
Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Party of One Pod. You can find Party of One Podcast at partyofonepodcast.com. And on October 16th, you can find the role-playing game that I wrote. We talked about it a little bit on the episode, Mission Accomplished. It is the role-playing game of super spies and office meetings. The premise in a nutshell, you are a team of secret agents. You have killed the bad guys. You have saved the world. Now you have to sit with management in a team meeting and figure out who gets the credit and who gets the blame. It is lightweight, satirical. It is entirely a game of massaging the truth and throwing your friends under the bus. It plays in under 2 hours, including character creation. It is a game that I'm really proud of, and I hope that you will go back at October 16th. I am working with Third Act Publishing, who are incredible. I am overjoyed to be partnering with them. It is an honor, and this is a game that I've been excited about for a very long time, and I hope you go back the game. It's going to be great.
It is. I can tell you from experience that this game, Mission Accomplished, is fantastic. If you need to listen, I don't know if you have it available on any other podcast feed.
I will in the very near future. It will also be on the Party of One feed. We're doing a special non-Party of One, Party of Some, I think I'm gonna call it.
Yes,
off schedule part Mission Accomplished when on launch day, so people can hear it, and then it's gonna be on a ton of other podcasts. I don't want to name names yet, but there's a lot of them lined up.
Well, as of now, October 1st, when you're listening to this show, you can listen to at least a early playtest of it on Everything is Awesome, episode 100. That was a lot of fun.
That was so much fun.
It was so much fun. I can't wait to sit down and play it again, especially I think that's a perfect game to play live.
I think it's a great theater game. I think it's a great performance game.
100%. And I can't wait to do it again. You need to go back this in 15 days from now on October 16th. Back it. We'll remind you on the November 1st episode. We'll see you in a month to talk about the month of October. Party of One episodes. Jeff, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, my pleasure.
Thank you to Jeff Stolmer for not just being on this show, but for allowing me to put this project together. Be sure to check out the show notes for all the important information to find Jeff, including his Twitter at Party of One Pod, information on his Kickstarter for Mission Accomplished, launching on October 16th, and be sure to check out partyofonepodcast.com for all things Party of One. After Party of One is produced by That's Entertainment Podcast Network. All music for the show comes from the song Hyperspace Pub Crawl by Thundering Asteroids. If you're interested in coming on the show, whether you're a podcaster, writer, actor, filmmaker, game designer, musician, professional wrestler, android half-orc, or garbage man turned spy, you can email me at afterparty@crudehumorstudios.com. On behalf of our guest, Jeff Stolmer, that's it for us. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Remember to fight the forces of fascism every single day. Remember that self-love and self-care are radical and defiant acts of resistance. The party's over. Go home. Go.
Entertainment and culture. Artist owned, fan supported.